The headlines: Iran once again slams the IAEA chief's recent meeting with the Israeli prime minister, saying the meeting was in a wrong place at a wrong time and with a wrong person. Russian forces are now in control of the center of the city of Severodonetsk, the epicenter of the battle for Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. And the UK economy declines for a second month in a row, heightening fears that the country is heading for a recession. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran has defended its measures in response to the recent resolution against the country's nuclear program by the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Definitely, we couldn't let the political and non-technical measure of the agency go unanswered. Our actions have been decisive and proportionate. What Iran is doing now falls strictly under its nuclear safeguards obligations. What Iran has stopped doing is its voluntary measures. It is unfortunate if the IAEA's Director General would not know this or intentionally pose Iran's measures differently. Iran is entitled to end the commitments it undertook as a goodwill gesture when the other party violates a formerly agreed obligation. Therefore, Iran's measures create no proliferation worries.
The spokesman also said the IAEA resolution is driven by Israel and backed by its Western allies. Khatibzadeh also slammed the IAEA chief for his recent meeting with the Israeli prime minister in Tel Aviv, saying it was a meeting in the wrong place at the wrong time and with the wrong person. He said the agency's director general has failed his duty to remain impartial and has been making comments against Iran beyond his technical capacity. The spokesman also dismissed the director general's comments that Iran's measures impede an agreement in the Vienna talks. He said the obstacle to the talks remained the U.S.'s refusal to fulfill its obligations under the 2015 agreement. Many on social media have appraised a 20-year cooperation agreement between Iran and Venezuela as an indication that the era of U.S. dominance is over now. Hashtag trending brings us a quick review of social media reactions to that story.
Hey everyone, welcome to another hashtag trending with me, Ali Reza. Venezuela and Iran are two friendly nations which managed to develop a strategic alliance over the past years in the face of crippling U.S. sanctions. And now the countries are further developing their ties. In an official visit to Tehran, the Venezuelan president signed a 20-year document with his Iranian counterpart on comprehensive strategic cooperation, which covers a wide range of petrochemical, oil, economic, tourism, political, and cultural fields. The strengthening of ties between Tehran and Caracas was welcomed on social media, with people praising the two countries for standing against Western sanctions and improving bilateral relations while the U.S. makes more enemies. Our first comment on Twitter comes from Peace B. Over the past several years, Iran and Venezuela have been the targets of a severe economic war launched by the West, and their bonds of cooperation proved integral to overcoming unilateral sanctions. Sentletse says on Twitter, Venezuela and Iran signed a 20-year cooperation agreement that covers agriculture, technology, oil, communications, tourism, and transportation. While the U.S. makes enemies, other countries are strengthening bilateral ties. Trucking Vulcan said, neither Venezuela nor Iran respects or fears the USA anymore. I bet if you ask Joe Biden why, he'll blame Putin. Venezuelan strongman Nicolas Maduro declares that the U.S.'s military dominance is over. Many blame the current economic crisis across the globe on the United States sanctions policy that targets the world's major oil producers, including Iran, Venezuela, and Russia. Some people are saying that the U.S. sanctions regime has negatively affected the U.S. and its economy more than those of the sanctioned countries. Let's move on to our next batch of comments. Ali Ujari said, U.S. naively believes the world can continue unaffected by its sanctioning Russian, Iranian, and Venezuelan oil. You want to see a real surge in oil prices? Just precipitate another crisis with Iran or Venezuela. Astro said the U.S. was counting on bribing Venezuela to lure it away from eastern anti-hegemonic countries through promises of easing blockade on the country. Iran and Venezuela today? Ha, ha, ha. Yajnadavam said U.S. sanctions policy should exempt oil for Iran, Venezuela, and Russia. A sanction that destroys your own economy more than it destroys the sanctioned country is pretty stupid, Joe Biden. Thak2K has our next tweet. The U.S. owns the world except for the few independent countries, Venezuela, Russia, China, Iran. It's getting harder for the CIA to keep countries in line. Now calls are growing on the U.S. to stop acting like a dictator and stop sanctioning countries in order to control them. Many people on social media believe that such measures serve no useful purpose other than creating hostility. Our final batch of comments starts with a tweet by Mario Pejic. The EU should not allow the U.S. to decide with which country the EU can trade. If the EU wants to buy Iran or Venezuela's oil, the EU has the right to buy it. Scott Stufflebeam said, tell me again how effective sanctions are. U.S. sanctions. Venezuela, 3 years since 2019, now ranks number one lowest gas price for 8 cents a gallon. Iran, 37 years, excluding 1981 to 1987, since 1979, now ranked number three lowest gas price for 20 cents a gallon. Syria, 36 years, since 1986, now ranked number four lowest gas price for $1.08 a gallon. Ram Gupta said that the U.S. should stop acting as dictator and not use sanctions to control other countries whenever it disagrees with them. The U.S. used sanctions to punish Cuba, North Korea, Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and recently Russia. It doesn't serve any useful purpose other than creating hostilities. And our final comment comes from Observer. If Iran and Venezuela can survive indefinite U.S. sanctions that made them willful and courageous, why other oil-producing countries, especially the Arabs, cannot follow suit by abandoning their inbuilt jealousies and fears of the U.S.? It will make them strong and an international force to reckon with. Well, that's it for another Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
Moving on, Russia says it has destroyed a large cache of weapons and military equipment, including some delivered by the U.S. and Europe to Ukraine and the eastern Donetsk region.
High-precision air-launched missiles destroyed in the area of Yudeshny railway station in the Donetsk People's Republic, a large number of weapons and military equipment delivered for Ukrainian nationalist groups, including from the United States and European countries.
A Russian official said a temporary deployment point of foreign mercenaries was also destroyed in the Lugansk region. Two batteries of multiple launch rocket systems in Lugansk and Kharkiv were hit as well. This as Russian and Ukrainian forces remain locked in a fierce battle in the city of Severodonetsk. Russian forces are now in control of the center of the city. Local Ukrainian authorities say Russian forces have destroyed a bridge connecting Severodonetsk to the city of Lychansk, another battleground still under Ukraine's control of Lugansk. Meanwhile, three civilians, including a child, were killed and four others injured by Ukrainian artillery fire at a market in a Russian-speaking area of Donetsk. Local media say NATO standard munitions were used in these attacks. Our correspondent Johnny Mueller is following the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war, which has now been concentrated in Ukraine's eastern region. Earlier, he gave us an update on the situation there and how the international community is responding to it.
It looked like they've taken Severodonetsk, but the battle for Donbass looks like it'll continue to be long and hard. Russia is being accused of war crimes in Kharkiv at the moment, and the Ukrainian army has just been shelling where I am now, the center of town. I just went outside to find my neighbors sheltering in the corridor. So the war continues very much here. There is some calls, increasing signs that some people, some countries, at least behind the scenes, are calling for peaceful negotiation. Indeed, the NATO head, Jens Stoltenberg, talked yesterday suggesting that this will that this war will have to go to the negotiating table at some point. But at the moment, that does still seem a long way off. And it looks like one side or the other is going to have to make a major breakthrough on the front lines for any side to start thinking about negotiations.
The UK economy has suffered its first back-to-back slump since the COVID outbreak, heightening fears that the country is heading for a recession. According to the Office for National Statistics, gross domestic product fell by bigger than expected, 0.3% in April. The economy had also registered a drop of 0.1% in March. Output in services, production, and construction sectors fell. That is the first time all main sectors have shrunk in over a year. Prices are rising in their fastest rate in 30 years, driven by record high fuel and energy costs. The Bank of England has warned the UK faces a sharp economic slowdown and an inflation of over 10% by the end of the year. Author and activist Fra Hughes says the economic hardships Western countries are currently going through is self-inflicted.
Well, absolutely. Anthony alluded that it's a political choice. It's nothing to do with a word recession caused by financial kind of misregulations by the banks that we had in 2007, 2008, 2009. This is a political choice by the first world countries, by the whole of Western Europe and the NATO-aligned American countries. This is very much self-inflicted. But the problem is, I think no matter what the people do, even people come out onto the streets, demand a change in the political direction of the government, that won't happen. We all know what needs to happen is the sanctions need to be lifted. Ukraine and Russia must come to a ceasefire and an agreed way forward about the future and neutrality of Ukraine, and allow the world really to recover from the COVID pandemic, which we're really just beginning to emerge from. But the reality of what should be done, what must be done, and what will be done are completely separate, because the people who run the government, many of them are billionaires, they care nothing for ordinary people, and they care nothing for the troubles that people will find themselves in, the difficulties that people will find themselves in. So what should be done and what will be done, there is a huge gulf between those two things.
The Indian government has demolished homes of several people for their alleged involvement in violent protests over the blasphemous comments against Prophet Muhammad. A young Muslim girl denounces the demolition of her home in the state of Uttar Pradesh as an act of vendetta. Afarin Fatima calls the demolition illegal and part of the right-wing Hindu nationalist government's policies against Muslims. She has also rejected the allegations that her father was a mastermind of the protests. Authorities also destroyed two other homes in the Uttar Pradesh at the weekend. The demolitions came after days of protests against Islamophobic remarks by two members of the ruling party, Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Some demolitions turned deadly after police opened fire on stone-throwing protesters and arrested hundreds of them. The sacrilege also triggered a diplomatic backlash against New Delhi. Muslims have long complained of rampant Islamophobia in India, saying that they face systematic abuse and hate crimes. Authorities have recently embarked on demolishing Muslim homes, a move legal experts call against the Constitution. While the U.S. is entangled in the Ukraine conflict, is also pursuing another confrontational approach on the other side of the world, namely with China. The U.S. has been accused by Beijing of creating instability in China's backyard, an accusation that the U.S. has leveled against China, both military and nature.
China and the U.S. are locked in a growing war of words over the self-ruled island of Taiwan, which Beijing considers as part of its territory. But now, amid simmering tensions between the superpowers, at the Shangri-La Dialogue Security Summit in Singapore, Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin accused the Chinese military of provocative and destabilizing activities near Taiwan. During the same event, the Chinese defense minister hit back at the U.S., saying Beijing had no choice but to fight if attempts are made to separate Taiwan from China.
If anyone dares to secede Taiwan from China, we will not hesitate to fight. We will fight at all costs, and we definitely will fight to the very end. This is the only choice for China.
I think it was very clear the exchange that General Wei had with Secretary Austin was quite straightforward as far as we understand. And his speech was also, of course, very sharp in terms of outlining what the Chinese were prepared to do if Taiwan would declare for independence. Now, both of these people laid out their positions on this. But the question is still very unclear how far the United States is willing to go in trying to use Taiwan in their attempt to bring together the countries of Asia as a counter to China.
But China also struck a more pacifying tone, calling for a stable China-U.S. relationship. Wei stated that the China-U.S. relation is at a critical and crucial juncture. He added that Beijing believes a stable Sino-U.S. relation serves the interests of both countries and the rest of the world. The Chinese defense minister also noted that China had achieved impressive progress in the field of nuclear weapons. Wei, however, noted that Beijing will only use them for defending the nation, never starting a nuclear war, nor ever use nuclear weapons first. He pointed out that the ultimate purpose of China's nuclear arsenal is to prevent a nuclear war.
The latest round of altercation between the two countries comes as they held their first face-to-face talks on the sidelines of a summit in Singapore on Friday. During that event, however, China also stated that besides military provocations like how Biden has said that would defend Taiwan militarily, Washington is trying to, quote, hijack countries in the Indo-Pacific region. That remark came in a reference to the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, which the U.S. announced in May and involves 13 countries, excluding China. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company.
Hello.
Oh no, the power is out and the elevator doesn't work. I have to go up the stairs. Ah, the sound comes from beneath the stairs. Oh my God! A white, beautiful Persian cat along with its four baby cats are here. How cute they are! The mother cat might be hungry. Let me bring some food for her. By the way, today I'm going to take a tour to Dharabad Nature and Wildlife Museum. Stay with me. Dharabad Nature and Wildlife Museum is a complete center for introducing Iran's wildlife and natural species. This educational and professional museum is located in Tehran. The museum has a building which is 2,500 square meters, also covering an area of 12,000 square meters. In this museum, you can gain comprehensive and evidentiary information about the nature of Iran. This museum also provides the visitors with the sciences of taxidermy of animals, as well as keeping plants. The museum became a member of the International Council of Museums, ICOM, in 1997. It is also an active member of the IUCN-CEC, Commission on Education and Communication of the Museum. This museum consists of a number of sections. In Dharabad Museum, five orders of mammals in 13 families of different animals, plus 165 species of birds, out of a total of about 517 species of birds identified in Iran, are displayed in the museum halls. One of the remarkable and rare examples that have been added to the museum collection is the extinct Persian tiger skin. I am now at the end of Ajudaniye Street near Dharabad neighborhood. Not a long way to the museum. Well, this neighborhood has pleasant weather and walking in this area is enjoyable. I am now in the hall, which covers a number of species from Asia, Europe, and North America. Oh, what a big and strange hall! Oh, look! This is Python, the longest snake in the world. Thank God, it's a taxidermy. And here, there are Indian and Sri Lankan peacocks, male and female. The female peacock has colorful spreading feathers and it's gorgeous. And in this part, mammals from Europe and North America are displayed. This is moose. The biggest deer in the world. And this is the European yellow deer. Yes. And here we have a grizzly bear from North America. How big it is! Oh, the Siberian tiger. It's magnificent. And here I am in the whole of Africa. This hall displays mammals from Africa, as well as migrating birds of this continent. At the entrance of this hall, you can see horn and skull of wild African bull, as well as the ivory of African elephant. And on my right, a black rhino, wild dog, and African leopard are displayed. Dorobot Nature and Wildlife Museum has several diverse sections. The Hall of Northern Iran, the Hall of Central and Southern Iran, the Hall of Marines and Reptiles, the Hall of Insects, and many other spectacular sections. Well, art is long and life is short, as they say. Indeed, I can't describe all the sections of this museum in a brief radio program. I can just hope for you to visit this museum soon. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Economic divide.
The Ukraine conflict continues to devastate the world economies, in particular economies in the Eurozone. As countries in Europe continue to ramp up pressure on Russia in the form of sanctions led by the U.S., their inflation is hitting record highs. Hi, I'm Kavitat Wei. This is Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, the Eurozone inflation, the highest on record, coming in at 8.1%. But inflation is not just restricted to Europe. This has become a global headache and a global phenomenon, like for the UK and for the US, experiencing inflation that they haven't seen in decades. Next, we're going to take a look at central banks, how they are scrambling on how to deal with the problem. Well, raising interest rates seems to be their only solution. Meanwhile, they are also grappling with the risk of recessions that may be occurring as we speak. Also, we are going to take a look at energy prices, some say at the heart of inflation. They're increasing as European countries failed to have a unified stance when it came to buying or not buying Russian gas. Do stay tuned.
The inflation rate in the Eurozone has reached levels which were unthinkable several years ago. According to official data released by Eurostat, Eurozone inflation has risen to a new record high of 8.1% in May, from 7.4% in April. That is the highest annual level since the creation of the euro currency in 1999. This is the 10th consecutive month that prices have been rising, and there are no signs of a let-up. Germany, which is Europe's biggest economy, has been among the hardest hit. Its inflation rate now stands at a record 8.7%. France, another Eurozone economic powerhouse, has experienced an inflation rate of 5.8%. The inflation rate in Spain stands at 8.5%, and in Italy, 7.3%. The fastest hike in price was registered in Lithuania. In May, the inflation rate of that small Baltic state stood at 15.7%. Energy costs remain the single biggest factor pushing up prices for consumers and businesses.
In May, it rose by 39.2% from a year earlier. The European Commission recently lowered its economic growth forecast to 2.7% this year from the 4% estimate in winter. There are warnings that Europe may tip into a sharp slowdown or outright recession before the end of the year.
The dragon has not yet full blasted itself, but it's underway.
It's time now to take a look at some of the social media posts on this. As a matter of fact, taking a look at what we are seeing in terms of inflation, just the latest, just a Google search on news, you can see Turkey's inflation rate is again the focus. Taking a look at the U.S. inflation, it says has it peaked, and also how central banks are scrambling to deal with inflation. Just some of the latest news results for that. Well, let's take a look at this first post from an online website. It says U.S. EU inflation results of unprecedented money printing. That's according to the Russian President Vladimir Putin. He pointed to the U.S. printing press and the EU green energy policies, in which inflation in the U.S. is a consequence of mistakes by American financial authorities, which they admitted to, while in the EU it has more to do with short-sighted energy policies in Brussels. The Russian President Vladimir Putin also said on Friday that either way it has nothing to do with Moscow or its actions in Ukraine. Next up, Twitter posts, while oil and gas companies are making record profits, they are charging consumers record prices, and every single House Republican just voted against stopping them from price gouging the Americans. Let that sink in. We're going to talk about price gouging later on in the program. Next up, inflation is global. Turkey's inflation soars to 73% as food and energy costs skyrocket. Then a look at this particular post, Biden's real plan to fight inflation. Just a blame game is what's going on, according to this post. And this chart actually outlines that. It says from him calling inflation transitory to then blaming the former U.S. President Donald Trump, then blaming the Republicans, and then coming back full circle and then calling it transitory again. Now, next, we take a look at this particular post, which says Eurozone inflation has moved up to 8.1%. That is the highest level ever. Meanwhile, the European Central Bank is still holding interest rates at negative levels. This is perhaps the greatest disconnect between easy monetary policy and unabating rising prices that the world has ever seen. All right, that obviously is a quick snapshot of what people think and what is out there when it comes to inflation. Let me introduce our guest for a breakdown on this in our first Q&A. We have Benjamin Chow who joins us. He's a professor at the Paris School of Technology and Business who's currently residing in Beijing, China. Okay, Benjamin Chow, welcome to Economic Divide. The war in Ukraine has compounded a problem that existed in the world, and that is focused on price increases that has led to inflation. This has been especially true in Europe. For example, as of March 2022, the inflation rate in the European Union, 7.8% up and increasing. Turkey looking at around 70%. How can inflation then be eradicated in order to bring it back to pre-existing levels?
Well, in monetary economics, the famous rule of thumb is that inflation is everywhere a monetary phenomenon. I think 95% of inflation should probably follow this rule. Fundamentally, inflation is driven by expectation of continuous rise of price levels, which in turn is driven by the relative shortage of goods given the money stock at hand. The current sanctions against Russia and the disruption of supplies from Ukraine create serious energy and crops shortage. And shortage expectation, and thus we are seeing historic inflation in decades. Now, the very fact that Europe relies on Russia for nearly 40% of its natural gas and 25% of its oil means that it is not possible to remove Europeans' need of Russian oil and gas in the near term.
All right, let's bring in Marshall Baker. Marshall Baker is an economist at the Schiller Institute who joins us. Marshall Baker, welcome to Economic Divide. The U.S. and its allies are being blamed for actually prolonging the Ukraine conflict. The U.S. has actually not even held back, saying its true intentions is to weaken Russia militarily mainly. Now, the question is at what cost? This is coming at a cost for the Europeans, also for the Americans who are suffering as a result. And the U.S. is taking the lead here in terms of following a policy towards Ukraine that is to the detriment of the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what we're seeing in prolonging the combat in Ukraine is a purposeful decision by global NATO, you could call it, Brussels, London, and the United States. Many of the leaders here have said they want to weaken Russia or just debilitate Russia. So many Ukrainians as well as Russians are dying. Millions of people are displaced because of this wrongful policy of, it's like adding gasoline to the fire.
It is time now for our Infant News section of the program. This is where we take a look at economic news from around the world. Hopefully we have something from where you are. Our first item, anti-Russia sanctions. The title, shooting themselves in the foot, Western sanctions on Russia. This is something that we have covered, but again, it's showing itself. In this case, this entry went on to say that Moscow has diversified its commodities exports as the EU faces the difficult task of replacing Russia as its energy supplier. That is something that the EU has been grappling with from day one since the Russia conflict or the Ukraine conflict started. Next up, Russia-China trade. Russia trade with China has hit a record high, $200 billion this year. Moscow continuing to pivot to Asia as ties with the West crumble. Now, it goes on to say before the start of the conflict, the European Union actually was Russia's top trading partner. But now that has been replaced with China. Really no surprise there. Everybody assumed that that is the trend that would follow after the conflict with Ukraine started. Next up, oil prices. OPEC to increase oil supply after pressure from the U.S. Well, good news maybe, but the prices just keep rising. In fact, the price of oil rose after the announcement was made. Oil producers said that they would raise the price by 50%, but it seems like that did not have an impact on the market. Only time will tell how that is going to pan out. And finally, mass revolts. That's right, that's what the title said. Are we headed for mass revolts to upturn the global economic model? How long can billionaires continue to amass wealth while the world's poorest struggle to buy food? The number of severely food insecure people has doubled from 135 million to 276 million. And that is why this entry is questioning this, that it is a possibility for it to happen. Well, that covers the items for this part of the program in our Infant News section. If you have any news from your part of the world, economically, economic in its nature, please send it to us.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to our in-depth section, Inflation, the theme of today's program. And in this case, we want to take a look at the not-so-obvious reasons behind this phenomenon. And in this case, in point, corporate greed is our focus. Okay, the U.S. is filled with multinational conglomerates that control vast parts of the U.S. economy and its output. Now, some of the giants when it comes to how they are actually in control of huge parts of the market. General Mills, Nestle, Kellogg's, Mars, Danone, Unilever, Mondelez and Coca-Cola and PepsiCo, all the different subsidiaries and brands that they control, that amounts to quite a bit of the U.S. economy. They've monopolized these sectors, which covers a vast variety of industries. Basically, to summarize this, the fruits of economic growth, well, they are being hoarded by America's profitable corporations. That's one of the conclusions that is being made. And these corporations are facing negligible competition. A lot of the concern about corporate concentration, well, it surrounds this potential to drive up prices. The fewer options there are, well, the fewer places consumers actually have to shop for goods and services. And as a result, then there is less pressure for competitors to keep the prices down. So they control the prices, and of course the only way is up when it comes to profits. However, everybody's ignoring the deeper structural reasons for the price increases. The concentration of the American economy basically is in the hands of a very few corporate giants with the power to raise prices, which is what we just covered over there. This is putting another perspective to that. So when you take a look at that, then we have to take a look at another conclusion that is being met here. Let's take a look at the market and how, if it was competitive, what would happen. So you got the corporations. These are some of the things that would happen. Corporations would keep their prices as low as possible. They would do that because they would be competing for customers, especially new customers. But when there's no competition, for example, no desire for new customers or keeping prices low, obviously a result of the lack of competition. And corporations would do everything to avoid passing those costs on to consumers in the form of higher prices, and that would be for the fear of that happening. Now, the lack of competition is overall what we're looking at behind why monopolies are successful in keeping prices at whatever point they want. You actually don't have to go too far to see how this is happening. Let's take a look at what U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren has said, making a reference to Chevron and Exxon, who have doubled the profits, in which she said, this isn't about inflation, this is about price gouging. What is price gouging? What does she mean by that? Well, price gouging, the definition that is when a seller increases the prices of goods, services, or commodities to a level much higher than is considered reasonable or fair. In some countries, that is actually illegal. And usually, this type of event, price gouging, occurs after a demand or supply shock. So the Ukraine conflict can be a reference point in terms of that shock or demand or supply shock to actually occur. All right, let's take a look at another example of a monopoly. In this case, in point, we're going to take a look at what happened in the U.S., the baby formula shortage. I don't know if you've heard about that. Well, that is something that has occurred. What is the reason behind that? Well, in part, it's due to a monopoly over this particular item. Why? Abbott Nutrition is the name. Yes, it controls 40% of the baby formula market in the U.S. Although the production had stopped, it has since announced that it would start up again, and the prices, as a result, are projected to increase. Why? Because a lot of price gouging that we were talking about was occurring with the minimal supply that was available in the market. So Abbott Nutrition takes a look at the price gouging, seeing how prices increased. You can be sure that they're going to increase their prices before the production was actually halted. All right, let's bring back Marsha Baker. She's an economist at the Schiller Institute to get her analysis into this. Marsha Baker, welcome back. U.S. inflation, we're going to take a look at that as our theme in this question. The highest level that is seen, consumer price index of the U.S. in March rose by 8.5% from a year ago. So the fastest annual gain since December of 1981. That is a lot for the U.S. and, of course, squeezing the general public and Americans as a whole. Energy prices, prices of food, etc. Now, when the U.S. goes out and assists Ukraine militarily to the tune of billions of dollars, then the question has to be asked, aren't Americans getting squeezed as a result?
The economic breakdown process in the United States is breathtaking. It's getting worse all the time. On May 26th, the new official figures came out that in the first quarter of 2022, the United States gross domestic product went down by 1.5% in absolute terms. And this is an understatement. Manufacturing declined and other activity declined. And the opposite happened. Imports shot way up. Americans are existing by imports from China, from South America, and other parts of the world, and the inflation hitting people in the United States because there is not productive activity backing up the dollar.
That sounds pretty apocalyptic based on what she's saying. All right, Benjamin Chow rejoins us. The professor at Paris School of Technology and Business, who joins us from Beijing, China. Benjamin Chow, welcome back. The U.S. and its allies are prolonging the Ukraine conflict. They've been accused of that. They're not going for the diplomatic route to try to reach some kind of resolve on this. And The U.S. has actually made no bones about its intentions and goal to weaken Russia militarily. And now, in this case in point, the Europeans are following the U.S. lead. But at the same time, they're shooting themselves in the foot. Their economies are suffering as a result. Isn't the U.S. at fault for following a policy on Ukraine that is actually, in some sense, to the detriment of the world economically?
Frankly, almost everyone sees that NATO did not want to see a de-escalation of tension since late February, before the military conflict has started. The NATO could have rejected Ukraine's entry to NATO outright, and the situation would be de-escalated immediately back then.
The inflationary trend is not limited to Europe alone. Prices in the U.S. are also rising drastically. The Labor Department reported earlier in May that consumer prices have jumped 8.3% last month from a year ago. The United States consumer confidence also edged lower in May, as Americans' view of their present and future prospects dimmed in the midst of persistent inflation. Consumer confidence index dipped to 106.4 in May from 108.6 in April.
For example, I went into the grocery store about a couple of weeks ago and I picked up a few small onions. And when I looked up on the register, it said that it was over $5. And I told the cashier, like, this isn't right. Like, this price has got to be wrong. Not for the two onions. Two or three onions should not be $5.
I don't think it's reached the highest point. I think that's probably still yet to come. You know, it's in bad shape right now. I don't think the worst has come yet.
Just recently, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen admitted that she erred last year, predicting that elevated inflation would not pose a continuing problem.
Sooner or later, we will see a recession, and the answer may actually be somewhat sooner rather than somewhat later. The Federal Reserve head and the Secretary of Treasury are meeting with the President of the United States even now, and clearly they have a mission in mind, not a mission impossible, but a mission to cut inflation down to something closer to the 2% target rate than the 6.3% rate that we've seen recently. That is going to hurt the economy. It's not going to be a steep recession, a deep recession. It's not going to see unemployment rates going up very sharply. But we are, by the end of this year or early next year, probably going to see something that would be called a recession, or at least a slowing of the rate of growth to something that's close to zero.
A number of reasons have been cited for the rising inflationary trend across the globe. The war in Ukraine and the ensuing sanctions that the West imposed on Russia have seriously disrupted global business and trade and affected regional and international players. Ukraine's economy shrank 16% in the first quarter of 2022. Compared to last year's first quarter, and it could be down by 40% by the end of the year. Russia has already suffered from the consequences of the sanctions. Furthermore, bottlenecks in global trade is also a serious factor. The delivery of goods and services has been seriously weakened due to the aftermath of the war and the pre-existing pandemic restrictions. And there's the fear that new variations of the COVID virus could cause disruptions in major economies. China has just ended tough COVID restrictions that were imposed following a surge in cases in several cities, including Shanghai. Given the current situation, there's a big question mark on Washington's insistence to send more weapons to Ukraine. The weapons will prolong the war and cause more humanitarian and economic damage. It seems that the U.S. is determined to make this war continue at the expense of Ukrainians, Europeans, and its own people.
Even before inflation became the economic monster that it is, ravaging the economies of different countries across the world, the inflation momentum was already there, and it had nothing to do with the Ukraine war. It had to do with one thing, globalization. First, what is globalization? Globalization is the process by which businesses or other organizations develop international influence or start operating on an international scale. And what does globalization have to do with inflation? This is the reason. Experts say U.S. undermining globalization by seeing China as a threat. Tensions between China and the U.S. boiled over when the former U.S. President Donald Trump came into power, who waged trade and technology wars. The former U.S. president promised that his American First policy would work to the advantage of Americans, but that did not happen. Trump's tariffs to imports of Chinese goods was a policy that hurt U.S. consumers more than those in China. The policy backfired and hurt U.S. consumers and companies. One study concluded that U.S. exporters had to pay higher prices for components imported from China. Tariffs on imported washing machines raised prices for washers by almost 12%, and on dryers as well. Costs that weren't passed on to the consumer were absorbed by importers. And at this point, prices began to rise for many commodities that were imported from China into the U.S. or were not viewed feasible by companies to import it from China. But costs within the U.S. for these items were much more than that from China. According to one economist, by inserting itself in global value chains in manufacturing and assembly, China, through its competitive advantage in labor-intensive goods, gave multinational corporations a low-cost means to massively boost production and sales. Add to that COVID-19 and now the Ukraine war, and maybe the coming clash with China. The U.S. is fast-tracking itself to unprecedented inflation levels, with the EU to maybe follow the U.S. lead. That does it for this edition of the program. Thanks for watching. Please send us any comments or critique that you may have of the program. Contact info is on your screens now. The worldwide inflation epidemic, if we can call it that, is not just about Ukraine. It was there actually even before the pandemic. Actually, it was there from a long time ago. And why do I say that? Because it existed in the form of what's called inequality. You've heard the phrase before, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. Well, that's exactly the case. That's been like that for a long time, purchasing power of the poor to have become less, so any price increase of any kind to hurt them. According to the latest, today 71% of the world's population lives in countries where inequality has grown. The U.S. and its NATO member allies have now compounded this through the Ukraine war. That does it for this edition of the program. For me, Kavitah Wai and the team, this is goodbye until next time.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.